Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Our next guest hosts a show on SiriusXM. He's also a terrific play-by-play broadcaster on college sports, pro sports, period. He's a, you know, you can do a play-by-play of an eating contest. Michael Yam joining us, formerly of the Pac-12 networks and some other places. Your play-by-play start, take us back in the day, childhood, Mike Yam, what were you calling?
Oh, my God. You know, it was funny because what reminded me of, and I appreciate you having me on, John, I read your article about your wife who used to listen and watch the Blazers. And what it reminded me of, and because she said in the article she only went to one Blazer game and wasn't able to go. So I grew up in the Northeast, and I was a Knicks fan. So I listened to Mike Breen growing up and, you know, would watch the Knicks games, and we never really had an opportunity. At that point, the Knicks were pretty good, and, you know, in the early 90s, so it was hard to get a ticket. And I remember going, you know, with my parents to Madison Square Garden a couple times and going and walking with my mom to the box office to try to get tickets, and we never could. But it just reminded me of that. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's wild. I think most people who are sports fans, as they're watching different games, different sports, they immediately just start imagining what a gig like that would be. So it's kind of crazy. But yeah, it goes back to the old days for sure.
Are there cassette tapes somewhere in the Yam family garage of Mike Yam calling games?
I've been strongly encouraging my parents to start purging some of the stuff from my youth because it's accumulated in the house, and I think my mom has finally started to do some of that stuff now. I'm sure there's a few cassettes, and certainly from my college days, I actually found a box that had cassette tapes and some old CDs. Yes, people still use CDs. At least that's what I was using when I was in college. So there's definitely a few of those from college, no doubt about that.
Television has advanced, obviously, dramatically, and we're all getting it watching these NBA games. We're seeing amazing different feeds and, you know, broadcast. And how does that change the job of a broadcaster during a game when you've got all these great advances?
You know what's really wild about it? So the last couple of years, John, I've been freelancing with Intel Sports, and we haven't been on site as we've been calling a lot of those games. Now, part of that has to do with the technology because it was in virtual reality, and I think people see those NFL commercials now, and they call it the spinny cam. It's kind of like that. So you have all these different angles, so you're really in need of multiple monitors, especially in the virtual reality world where I was working with Intel on. So it does change things, and in some ways it enhances because you've got the benefit of some replay monitors that you wouldn't necessarily have, and just different camera angles as opposed to that live view. But John, you know this. I mean, you've covered games, you know, for a really long period of time. There's nothing that really beats the excitement and the energy of being inside of an arena. But the unique thing, and you make reference to the NBA, you know, that NBA restart now, it's not like we have fans, right? Like, they're piping in that noise. So I think some of that energy is missing a little bit. But look, it's a testament to how good the NBA has done it. I haven't noticed, like, these games have been terrific, have been glued to the television, so I haven't necessarily missed that fan engagement. You know, those boards, they've done a pretty good job in the background of showing the fans and, you know, seeing the different crowds and sometimes the occasional famous person. So definitely a different vibe, no doubt, and maybe even picking up fouls and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, I think the league has done an excellent job making sure that the people that we're watching aren't really missing out.
You can hear Mike Yam on SiriusXM, Channel 373, Pac-12 Radio. Yam, you know, what are you guys talking about when it comes to the Pac-12? Like, today's show, what are you talking about?
You know, it's actually interesting because I felt like, you know, the last couple of days I was working with Coach Neuheisel on ESPNU Radio, and with Rick, there's always these blast down memory lane where we kind of go off and Rick starts singing and doing all those types of things. But what's really interesting is sort of seeing this divergence between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and what the rest of college football is doing. And, you know, you see an FCS game like we did over the weekend with Central Arkansas and Austin Peay, and you start getting some FOMO. And look, John, I'll be honest with you. I've been on the side, and I give a lot of credit to the universities for making a tough decision financially. Everyone understands the millions of dollars that these campuses are losing. People talk about negative recruiting, but to me, you can legitimately go into a living room of a kid and say, hey, like, we actually care about your health and well-being. So I give them credit for that decision, but I see a game on TV and I'm like, man, can we actually do this? Then I see the results coming out of the Big Ten, specifically Penn State, where they're saying a third of their student athletes had asymptomatic or not that had COVID-19 are dealing with myocarditis. And if that's left untreated, that's a fatal disease. So I go, okay, maybe we're making the right decision. But, you know, when it comes to testing, that's really the biggest key right now, I think, for any of these leagues to try to play. So a lot of testing, a lot of what should we do, questioning why Donald Trump hasn't called Larry Scott, I think is also been a little bit of a fun topic as well.
Mike Yam with us, formerly the Pac-12 Network. You can hear him broadcasting and doing play-by-play moving forward. Mike, the Pac-12 has called a news conference here for later this hour. They're going to announce a partnership in which they say they can do rapid testing now, and they're saying it could, key word is could, result in a quicker return to play. They're obviously going to do research with it. They're going to get all the universities the equipment. What is the progression in your mind as it comes to, okay, you get rapid testing. Is there need to be a period where they can study that before they can move forward, or how does that progress?
You know, I actually, before we got on, I was trying to do some reading because I didn't understand. I wasn't familiar with that company, Quidel, I think is how it's pronounced. And I'm thinking to myself, and John, I've been a little bit of a news junkie recently, and I'm like, why don't I know about this company? Why don't I know about this rapid test from this company, but I know about Abbott's 15-minute test? And I think what's fascinating about it is I found a press release or a conversation from their CEO from a few days ago, and he's saying, you know, in September they can pump out 1.9 million tests per week. And thinking to myself, all right, well, that seems like a big number. You know, is that enough? Like, where are you in the pecking order? And for as much as people were talking about, well, there's this rapid test, it's not like you flip the switch and go, all right, every university in the Pac-12 footprint goes and gets these tests and they're readily available. You know, Abbott was saying 50 million tests per month. Federal government bought 150 million of them. You know, I'm sure Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, and Donald Trump probably talked about testing if that conversation, you know, when it did take place. So to me, look, it's a game changer. I look at the conference. If they're able to acquire this testing that is roughly, from what I read, about 96% accurate, you know, that's huge. And I think there were some signals here, John. I don't know if you saw the story. The other day I saw that the Pac-12 conference had told the NCAA that a early December as opposed to a Thanksgiving start for college basketball would be their preference, but they could make November work. And I'm like, well, wait a second. How do you make a college basketball season work that early and not a college football season? So in my mind, I kept thinking there must be something we don't know. But the Pac-12 put themselves, Larry Scott put himself against the wall when he releases a 12-page document on medical evidence and data as to why the league's not playing. For the league to play, they need something like this rapid testing to be able to show, hey, it's safe for your kids to go back on campus and be a part of athletics.
I know it's easy for me from the 20,000 foot view to look at the Pac-12 networks and kind of see the landscape and go, okay, they're trying to be a media company. They're trying to be a football conference. And maybe it's too soon because you worked there. You were amid it.
Sure.
There's a lot of good people, talented people,
no doubt,
working at the Pac-12 network. But what do you make of sort of the bigger picture? Is the mission pointed in the right direction, or should the Pac-12 just get back to being a conference?
I think it's a great question, John, because, you know, those furloughs and layoffs over the last couple of weeks or so, I mean, those are people. Those are a lot of my friends who have families and kids, and the trajectory of their lives sort of change. And not to sound dramatic, but, you know, I mean, try to look for a job right now in sports. It's not exactly the easiest thing in sports television. So, you know, the disappointment's pretty significant. And I think what's interesting about your question is, you know, in year one, it wasn't, when your startup network, I don't think you sign on to do 850 events, which wasn't year one. That's what they're doing now. But there was a ramp up. I think it was 450 in year one, 550, and then it increased to 850, which is what they're contractually obligated to do. I don't think you sign up for that inventory and go, all right, we're going to be profitable. You look at any other major sports network, they're not pumping out events at that rate, and because it's financially not necessarily the most viable option. The mission of the network wasn't necessarily for a money-making thing like the Big Ten Network, who's pumping out tens of millions of dollars to their respective campuses. And I get it. It sounds weird to say that, but the conference was looking for exposure, and that's what the job of the network was. And then all of a sudden, when you start seeing the Big Ten Network pumping out that revenue, the SEC Network, their ties with ESPN, the formation of the ACC Network, and you start realizing there's a revenue gap, then there becomes pressure on the Pac-12 Network to try to duplicate that success. And I don't think the conference and the network were in a position to go and do that with that model. I don't know what happens in 2024 when the rights are up, but it's a daunting time, and I got to think that when the rights do go up and those negotiations take place, there has to be a change in the philosophy, and maybe that is, hey, it's, you know, the Amazons of the world or whatever other company that's getting some of the Olympic sports to try to drive some extra revenue. But to me, everything has to circle around football and basketball, and more specifically on the football side, because I think we all understand that that really is the revenue driver.
One of the frustrations I had is, you know, when I did get to see the programming, it was like you and Yogi Roth and a whole host of others, Coach Aliotti and others that I really respect. And I thought, oh, man, if they could just get this distribution, how did that feel to be on the inside? Or do you even concern yourself with that because it's out of your control?
You know, at first, John, you do think about it because that's what people are talking about. And I think the frustrating thing, you mentioned some of the guys that we got to work with, and you know a lot of them. You know, at Coach Aliotti, he's been calling me weekly, just, you know, Yammer, just checking in on your melon, just making sure you're good, you know, and like you develop these relationships. That's the worst Aliotti impression, by the way. But, you know, you check in, everyone just checks in on how everyone's doing. And I had never worked at a place, John, where everyone got along the way that they did, and those conversations and those friendships were not just seasonal ones like they were at other networks. And I think all of us sort of felt like, look, we can't control a deal with DirecTV or, you know, pick a provider. What we can do is make sure that we're covering our stories as well as anyone else. And certainly we wanted to do it at the highest level possible so that if you were watching, you know, pick an Oregon game or an Oregon State game, if you're watching it on Pac-12 Network, when you got to the halftime or you were watching pregame or postgame, you were getting coverage on your specific team. You know, that was disappointing. Sometimes I was watching a game on another network. They go to halftime, and it's a taped halftime show. That doesn't even reference the first half of those Pac-12 teams. And that was always disappointing to me, and it was a point of pride. So you're right. Like, the distribution, we all knew. I mean, it's the, the elephant in the room. But there was no control over it. So it was just dominate and just make sure you could do the best job you could.
Broadcaster Mike Yam with us. You can catch him on SiriusXM Radio and calling a game near you when games are back on. I've squabbled about, you know, the location, the downtown San Francisco location. Sure. Just from a perspective of, you know, you've worked with a lot of people who are commuting. I've lived in the Bay Area. I grew up in the Bay Area. I understand the challenges. How much pressure does that put on sort of your production staff, camera people, camera operators, sure, producers, directors that are, you know, forced to live in an area if they want to work for the Pac-12 Network that is costly?
It's a great call, and I know some of the numbers that have recently come out about rent. We all knew it's expensive. I mean, I'd be embarrassed to tell you what I'm paying for rent on a 730-square-foot apartment. I mean, it's astronomical. And most of the crew that we worked with, you know, they have roommates, and I think that's the other challenge of this. When you hear about these furloughs and these layoffs, I'm thinking to myself, like, my God, like, some of these kids, you know, they're not making money. Like, they're just, you know, to live in the Bay Area it's a fortune. You know, and at the same time, I hear about, oh, it could be anywhere in the conference. And while I agree with that assessment, because it's hard to get talent, and I don't mean on-air people, I just mean, like, talented television, you know, production people in the Bay Area, is not always the easiest thing. It's not Los Angeles, where there's so many networks that are out there. So I do think that that's definitely a challenge. But John, I mean, you know, any of your listeners right now can go to, you know, Redfin on their phone and just look up apartments in San Francisco. And by the way, what they're going to see now is a significant drop in rent prices because of the pandemic. People are leaving San Francisco right now in droves. I mean, I'm in my car right now and I'm looking, driving around the streets and places are boarded up. You know, it's a really sad state of affairs right now in the city, but the cost is astronomical. And I there's no doubt it's going to be a challenge for a lot of those people that were laid off. It's the first thing that I thought of when I saw the story online about all those furloughs.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to see that anytime people are losing their jobs. I think it's tough. And certainly everybody looks at the dollars. They're out there. They're on the executive salaries are right there on the Form 990. It's not hard to look and go, okay, wait a minute. Why are we not saving the network that everyone was so proud of? Michael Yam is with us. You have such a great story. And for people who don't know Mike Yam's story, I encourage you to go to his Twitter account, and you have pinned that great first person piece that you wrote sort of about your own upbringing. Can we touch back on that a little bit? Like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
My wife's story is a story of a kid who came over with her parents from Taiwan. Your story, I think, epitomizes the American dream as well.
It's why, you know, I didn't realize about your wife until I read the story that you put up recently, and being, you know, working in the city in the hotel, I sort of laughed when I realized that they took a hammer to the sign that you brought home for him, which I thought was in a lot of ways really poetic. And even that parallel, right? Like I think about my grandfather, who was an undocumented immigrant. My family, my dad's side of the family, I'm half Italian, half Chinese. And, you know, they grew up in Hong Kong, super poor. My grandfather, you know, took a job as a sailor. And when the boat docked in Baltimore, just never got back on the ship. And with the help of attorneys and saving money, and I mean, we're talking about, you know, running from and hiding from officials in a Chinese restaurant in the back in a dumpster just so that he wouldn't get caught. You know, he was able to kind of, you know, scrape together some money and save, and he was able to bring, you know, my dad and my aunts and my uncles and my grandmother to the U.S. They opened up, you know, a Chinese restaurant in New York, and there was a lot of crime in that area, and they had to close it, and it was sad. But, you know, that side of the family, and John, I don't know if your wife's kind of like this, like they don't like to talk about it. It took so much probing. Like you'd hear stories over the years, and like I knew, generally speaking, what had happened, but it's really painful for, I think, a lot of families that realize the struggle and the sacrifice of some of their loved ones to make sure that, like, I mean, I'm sometimes embarrassed, John. Like I've gotten paid to talk about sports. Like that's what the job is. I made a career out of that. And I think, like, I'd like to think I'm tough, like, you know, but am I mentally strong enough to do the things that some of my family members had to do? I don't know what the answer is to that. And it's sometimes a little embarrassing to know some of the privilege that I've had in my life, whether it was going to a 4-year university, that was never even a question. Like it was just sort of understood, like that's what I'm going to do. That wasn't the case for my dad, who was, you know, didn't speak English when he came here when he was 16. It's mind boggling to me the path that a lot of people have to make in this country. But that's why, in my opinion, the United States is the greatest country in the world, because there are opportunities like that for people who are not in this country, as long as they can get in and stay here, which I know has been a major issue as of the last few years. But it's a journey that I think a lot of people can empathize with.
Follow him on Twitter @Mike_Yam. You can read his first person account of his own story and his family's story. Michael, I really appreciate you making time for us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope on the podcast too, your wife's interview's up there, because I want to hear a little bit more about her story. So
She's popping on next. Popping on next, and we'll touch on it. Mike, I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks again, John.
All right, Michael Yam, formerly of the Pac-12 Network. Really good stuff. Interesting stuff there. A lot to parse. We'll talk with Anna coming up. Also, I'll have the latest from the Pac-12 conference. They're talking a little bit about the development that they have. They have a rapid testing research program that they are unleashing across the conference that could, keyword could, result in a quicker return to play for football and basketball. I'll have sound from that news conference. I'll give it to you next, right here. Anna has joined me in studio. Me and the Mouse. Is that what I'm talking about? Join me in studio. The Pac-12 Conference, meanwhile, is announcing an agreement they have for a rapid daily testing program. Larry Scott, the conference commissioner, speaking just a minute ago about the partnership, why it's a game changer.
This enables us to know every day before every athletic practice or game that everyone participating tested negative for COVID-19. This access to daily rapid result testing, simply put, is a game changer.
Called it a game changer. Also said, in addition to that, it's coming at a cost that they can stomach.
I can maybe start. So the price of the tests is part of the agreement, which is confidential, so we can't share the price. But what I can say, Kyle, is that there's two components to this. One is the procurement of the tests, which the conference and our members will be responsible for. And the second component is the research study, which will be a collaboration between our Pac-12 athletics departments and Quidel, similar to research they're already doing with some of our campuses beyond athletics, and they do with other organizations. And we're very pleased Quidel is going to be able to support those efforts financially and otherwise. But the details of that are confidential.
Confidential details. Why are we having a news conference if you can't talk about the details? It's really frustrating. The basic takeaway I'm getting is that this could be great. It also doesn't answer the question of, okay, now that you can test, does that necessarily address the other problem, the cardiac MRIs that were going to have to be done? And the doctor at Penn State today coming out and saying that 30 to 35% of the athletes who tested positive for coronavirus inside Penn State's program had issues with their hearts that, if not addressed, could be potentially serious issue, heart issues. Anna, your reaction, you've been in a lot of news conferences. You were kind of furrowing your brow as Larry Scott was talking.
I'm just reacting to this and learning about this, yeah. Along with everybody else. I mean, at first glance, it seems like great. You know, he's calling it a game changer, and this will be one of the tools that will hopefully propel them toward the return to athletic competition. I don't know if it's going to necessarily accelerate it, but you know, that's good. I immediately want to know more about Quidel or whatever that company is, and the what kind of research are they doing on the Pac-12 schools, right? And why is that information confidential? Like, the reporter in me is like, red flag. I want to know more about that.
Because what they'll say is the Pac-12 is not a public institution and Quidel is a private institution, so therefore they don't have to disclose what that is. Here's what he said about the research that they'll be doing.
In this research partnership, the research aspect of this partnership, I can assure you that the Pac-12 and Quidel share a common purpose, not only to ensure the safety of our student athletes and to use, but to use this large population research study to advance our understanding of the COVID-19 virus and help to prevent the spread. I'm sure our athletes will be proud to be a part of this Pac-12 initiative that not only will help keep them safe, but ultimately the results from this testing will help improve public health at large and the well-being for their families and hometowns across the country.
All right, just talking point, talking point, talking point, talking point. I need a real person up there. You got a wax figure up there as the commissioner of the conference.
I don't blame him for that.
I do.
He's working off. It's he needs to be very specific in what he's saying.
I do.
His words will be parsed and, you know, picked apart by people like you.
Just say, like, because the take, what everybody wants to hear is, does this mean football is going to kick off early? And what he should be saying is, look, we want to manage everybody's expectations. This is only part of the equation, but we're super excited that we've got rapid testing. It allows us to do some research on athletes. You know, I think a more inspired, maybe more confident leader who's not reading off a teleprompter would would win that news conference, but that's just me.
So, I mean, the good thing here is that if this is successful, you know, part of the challenge in returning to athletic competition is overcome, which is lack of prompt testing and results turned around quickly.
Yeah.
So then the other part is still that, hey, by the way, COVID's still spreading.
COVID's spreading, and there this, you know, this heart condition, this myocarditis is a serious issue. It's a fatal issue if it's untreated. It doesn't address that. Like, when you're, are you putting athletes? Because see, the calculus that the Pac-12 used, it's different than what the SEC used. Mm-hmm. The Pac-12 said, these are student athletes. We are charged with their care. Part of the reason why we're not returning to play is the cost of testing and that it's not available to our universities. The other part is these cardiac MRIs and the unknowns. And we still feel like we have to care for students. This does not address that second part. You're right. Here's what Larry Scott said about the research and why this is an important step.
So this is a very important and significant step, but there's other considerations that will go into our return to play, Heather. First and foremost, government approvals, public health authority approvals. As you point out, we still have six universities, our four California schools, our two Oregon schools, that don't have the requisite approvals from public health authorities to engage in contact practice at the moment. Even if we were ready to start tomorrow, we couldn't. But we've always said, you know, we've gone about return to play in a very measured and I think thoughtful way, saying all along, we're going to let the data and the science drive us. And we're going to have a high degree of confidence that by returning to contact, returning to play, we're not encouraging the spread and putting student athletes at higher risk as a result of that sport competition. This ability to have daily testing with immediate results is a huge step forward for us. But some of those other considerations are going to be paramount, Heather, before we can declare when we think we're likely to resume.
There's Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner. Your phone calls, your reaction to that. 503-417-7575 is the number. I also will point out that he mentioned the control that your governor has over the return to play. Just like the Big Sky Conference, where you have the governors of California and Washington and Oregon who are saying you cannot right now have contact practicing. That is another issue that is ongoing. So you've got governors in the states that are saying, look, you're still in phase one. You're not in phase, you have to be in phase three in the state of Oregon in order to have those practicing. Now, it's conceivable that Governor Kate Brown could get Benton County, could get Lane County, Oregon and Oregon State, to a place where they could have that practice available to them. But what about the schools in California? What about the schools in Washington? Big questions. Your phone calls, 503-417.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.